Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a post-mortem on the defeat for Labor and the Democrats as the state of Michigan, the birthplace of the labor movement, became the 24th state to adopt the anti-union right-to-work law. A specialist on labor at UC Berkeley, Dr. Harley Shaken, joins us to examine how the Republicans snookered labor and the Democrats and what can be done to reverse the situation. Then we'll look into the latest successful missile test by North Korea that has boosted the prestige of the emperor-like boy leader whose subjects are dancing with joy in the streets. Sumi Terry joins us. She was the Deputy National Intelligence Officer for East Asia at the National Intelligence Council and the Director of Japan, Korea, and Oceanic Affairs at the National Security Council. While China has appealed for calm, we will discuss the reasons why China protects the family dynasty that rules this erratic failed state on its border. Then finally, we will speak with a general who wants to cut the Pentagon budget that has been largely exempt from alarm over the so-called fiscal cliff. General Robert Gard, the chairman of the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation and a former executive assistant to two secretaries of defense, joins us to discuss the low-hanging fruit that could be easily cut from the bloated defense budget and would improve the nation's national security and economic health. And joining us now is Dr. Harley Shaken, who is a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He studies labor, information technology, the organization of work, global economic integration, and trade. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Harley Shaken.
It's nice to be here.
And what just happened in Michigan, making Michigan the cradle, if you will, of American labor, the birthplace of the United Auto Workers, in many ways the kind of crucible of the American middle class. Nevertheless, the Republican-controlled legislature and the governor just signed a right-to-work bill making Michigan the 24th state in the United States to have these right-to-work bills, which, of course, again, are misleadingly labeled. They sound like they're about freedom, which is the argument that the Republicans make, but really they're about cutting off the oxygen to the Democratic Party, defunding them via the ruse of allowing members of labor unions not to pay, in fact, making it a law that they don't have to pay dues, and they get benefits without having to pay for them. And of course, it is a fairly pretty clear what's going on here. How did they get so blindsided? How did they get so, why were they so wrong-footed on this one?
Well, I think you have it very right. This was an important blow to labor, particularly symbolically, given all the associations with Michigan and given what Michigan has meant nationally, not simply in terms of the United Auto Workers and other unions, but the middle class really expanded dramatically in the post-World War II period because of unions, and Michigan was the locus for a lot of that happening. What happened here on this right-to-work bill was, I think, the Democrats and labor itself were blindsided by a very bold Republican move. This wasn't an issue of voters in Michigan all of a sudden embracing the notion of right-to-work. This was legislation that was passed in a lame-duck session, under the dead of night with no debate, and the governor, who's been in office 2 years, his first term, who had said all along he wouldn't sign it, it was far too divisive for Michigan, he is a Republican, did an about-face and signed it. So we have the legislation. It's a blow to labor, to be sure, but it's not the end of the story. It's the beginning.
Well, it seems to me, Harley Shaken, without being too cynical, that Governor Snyder just snookered the Democrats and the labor unions in making those pledges. He was elected in 2010 with the Karl Rove-engineered sweep in the midterm elections that caught the Democrats by surprise. That was a strategic plan. I mean, you can almost hear what was said in the back rooms with Karl Rove doing a PowerPoint briefing with, along with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, funded by the American Petroleum Institute. What we're going to do is we're going to take over the state legislatures in all of the key swing states, and we're going to put in this model legislation designed to break unions so that we bankrupt unions, take away their money, which means we in turn take away the money that fuels the Democratic Party. And that way we will make ourselves the permanent majority. We'll control the swing states and we will defund the Democrats. The writing is on the wall. I mean, it's so clear that this is a strategic plan that has worked out extremely well.
Well, I think you're quite right that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, a far-right legislative group with Koch brother money, among others, had a big hand in this. Planning on this specifically started in 2007. All that said, there may have been a Republican miscalculation on this as well. The governor was elected as a pragmatic problem solver. And the day after signing this, he looks like a right-wing ideologue who's creating a problem. That's not simply my perspective. The Detroit Free Press, one of the two most important papers in Michigan, who endorsed Governor Snyder for election and has supported him for much of the first 2 years, has done several blistering editorials calling the signing of this bill outrageous and saying he has betrayed the independents in the state. And there are hundreds of thousands of independents that were critical to his reelection. And this sense of fair play being thrown out the window could come back to haunt the governor and the legislators who voted for this. So labor isn't simply going to leave this alone. This is going to be central going forward, but it's not just labor. It's a broad swath of independents in the state who all of a sudden feel they were snookered and are confronting a governor who's not the tough nerd he portrayed himself to be, but is somebody who was able to do an about-face instantly and embrace something that is going to be very divisive in the state and quite counterproductive, I suspect, going forward.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Harley Shaken, who's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He studies labor, information technology, the organization of work, global economic integration, and trade. And we're talking about how the Democrats and labor were caught by surprise in Michigan, where in a lame duck session, the Republican legislature pushed through in the dead of night. They locked the doors. They kept public comment out and pushed through these so-called right-to-work laws. And the governor just signed it, even though the entire congressional delegation, mostly Democrats, showed up and met with him prior to this. The president showed up as well and made the point that the right to work means the right to work for less money, and said that this is not about economics, this is all about politics. They couldn't have put this guy on more on notice. I'm sure the president, the White House, let the governor know that he's not going to get any cooperation from them in the next few years. And I'm sure the congressional delegation let him know that they're not going to get any cooperation.
The governor was stuck between a rock and a hard place. He was in danger of losing the far-right part of his base and important contributors. And if he went that route, which he did, he's got some even larger problems that he's going to face. I think he miscalculated how sensitive an issue this is in Michigan, not simply with union people, but more broadly how this would play with independents. The irony is that the president was coming to Michigan and was in Michigan several days ago to herald a new $100 million investment in a Chrysler plant, Detroit Diesel, which took place well before any right to work was on the horizon. The president said directly, as you pointed out, this is a political move. What it does is gives you the right to work for less. And I think it cannot be understood in any other way than as a lowball political move. November 6th, the president carried Michigan by 10 percentage points over Governor Romney, who was born and grew up in the state. Beyond that, the Democratic Senator, Debbie Stabenow, who was up for re-election, won re-election by even a broader margin over her conservative Republican opponent. So labor should have been celebrating because it played such a key role in these victories, and the Republican right seized the moment, but it can't be understood in any other way than a political victory. It could prove short-term.
Well, it seems to me that the roots of this right-to-work canard in American labor, obviously, it all first got its footing in the South. And, of course, if you go back to the Civil War, in many ways, that war was really about economics, not about the moral issue of slavery. I mean, you don't get people to go off and die for a moral issue. It's pretty hard, but you can certainly get people to go off and fight and die if their livelihood's at stake. And in many ways, the South has this feudal tradition, and the North, the Union, was both about keeping the U.S. together and also about, I think, about the idea of protecting workers' rights. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I suspect that this is a big part of it. And you have this kind of different culture down in the South, where they've invited all of these foreign auto companies in, et cetera, and they work for much less wages. So how do you overcome that? Because what's happening now is that Southern kind of feudal values, if you will, are spreading north here. And the North, particularly Michigan, was both where the slaves escaped to and was also where the UAW was founded. And an awful lot of African Americans moved from the South to Michigan and became a part of the middle class. So I see some really deep ironies in this.
Oh, there are many, many ironies. One of the ironies that has come out of this, and again, this is a narrow political move, it was played as right to work attracting business to the state. That is a very small factor, if a factor at all. But the real impact of this for both sides is it's perceived as a Trojan horse for further onslaughts against unions. One of the ironies is Governor Walker in Wisconsin was asked whether he thought right to work would be a good thing now in Wisconsin. He said, no, it would be too divisive. So if you've got Scott Walker saying something related to labor is too divisive, you understand this isn't the beginning of the end for unions in terms of right to work. Governor Corbett in Pennsylvania, same thing. But he's not by any means clamoring for this. Governor Kasich in Ohio, once again, he knows firsthand what a labor response can mean. So this could prove a costly victory. The symbolism is clear. It may be damaging, but it doesn't necessarily have to be damaging for labor in the short term. One out of every five people in Michigan is a union member. 28% of the voting public comes from union families. Labor has considerable resources and a critical mass, and I think this will galvanize a strong response. It won't even necessarily have a huge impact in terms of collecting of dues from people who decide not to pay dues. That's a real danger. We won't know till we see what happens over the next year or so. But in Las Vegas, the culinary workers in a right-to-work state have 98% of the people in the casinos they represent paying union dues. So there's a lot of imponderables here. It is damaging, but by no means immobilizing for unions. And the flip side is it could result in a revitalized labor movement and new links to non-union workers and to a broader community in Michigan that views this as a violation of democratic principles and as something that was a problem that was introduced, not solved.
So does that mean in the next 2 years, as the unions and the Democrats fight back against the Republicans and the governor and make life difficult for him, will this new law have an immediate effect on defunding the unions, which is the whole purpose of the law?
Absolutely. It could, but it doesn't necessarily have to. All this says is if you're in a union shop, and you don't want to pay union dues despite the fact that you're getting the benefits of that representation, that's up to you. It would be a little bit akin to giving citizens the right not to pay taxes if you elect a president you disagree with. Be that as it may, it doesn't mean that large numbers of workers will choose to do that. They could, but I suspect the unions and fellow workers on the shop floor, in the offices, in other areas will work very hard to avoid that taking place. Some of it, no doubt, will. We don't have a clear idea in a place like Michigan, where union density is so high, what's going to take place. If union density, that is the percent of the workforce that's in unions, was much lower, a right to work could have a much larger effect. But the impact, other than symbolic, is yet to be seen. But what we do know is, starting right now, unions are looking at court challenges, recall elections, ballot initiatives, and revisiting this in 2014 when the governor's up for re-election.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Holly Shaken, it seems to me, though, that the debate that we need to have here is we need to explore the thinking that goes on in this country that plutocrats like the Koch brothers exploit with this big lie that they put out about the billionaires and millionaires in this country being the job creators, and that corporations extort states and localities by getting huge tax breaks and threatening to leave if they don't get what they want. And a part of this whole thing that happened in Michigan was the idea that we've got to make conditions more favorable for employers, for corporations, acknowledging or preemptively rolling over for them, as though we in labor and as citizens and consumers have got to be nice to these powerful people, otherwise they'll pack up and leave us in the lurch. And there's also this notion out there of aspirational politics, that people, working class people who vote against their interests, are temporarily inconvenienced millionaires. And so I'm trying to figure out, I've always tried to figure out, since that book about What's the Matter with Kansas raised some of these questions, of why it is that this kind of thinking is so pervasive, and what's it going to take for people to recognize the folly and how much they're being conned by the people who already control the lion's share of our wealth and our political power in this country, the corporations.
Well, I think we've seen a growing frustration and anger over inequality in the U.S. We recently did a seminar on this here at Berkeley, and Emmanuel Saez, who is an economics professor here and a very well-regarded person on the issue of inequality, pointed out that the U.S. Around 2005 surpassed Argentina in terms of inequality and rivals Colombia, the most unequal country in South America, one of the most unequal countries in the world. It's not just inequality as an abstraction. It is the lack of mobility, the lack of opportunity, all the things that this builds into a society, including undermining democracy. So learning how to compete in the global economy, dealing with inequality are tough issues. And this move towards right to work, or right to work for less, as President Obama puts it, is a distraction at best, and really offers no alternatives for either a more successful state, the creation of jobs, or addressing the issue of inequality. It really requires redefining the debate as part of the process going forward.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Dr. Holly Shaken.
Nice talking to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Dr. Holly Shaken, who's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He studies labor, information technology, the organization of work, global economic integration, and trade. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the successful launch of a North Korean missile that has North Koreans dancing in the streets.
There's power in a fire.